Good afternoon. Welcome to Build. Welcome to Map Session. My name is Apurva Thanki, Program Manager on Windows 10 Maps team. With me,
I'm Ricky Brundred. I'm a Senior Program Manager on the Big Maps Customer Advisory team.
Today, we are going to talk about Microsoft's mapping platform. And we'll be talking about Data Map Control that we support through our UWP platform on Windows 10. And we have got updates around Bing Special Data Services and Web Map Control that Ricky is going to cover it in the next segment. We recognize that as a developer, you make a choice around your app framework based on the targeted devices, and our Microsoft's map platform offers you a native UWP map control as well as web control so that you can target your apps across Windows devices and across cross-platform devices, especially around the JavaScript-based apps. And both of our map controls are powered by our REST services. Our REST services offer you a plethora of API, REST API services. You can look at it as special data services, boundary data services to get the boundary around the zip code, geocoding, reverse geocoding, routing, traffic. You can put the static imagery and you can evaluate the elevation around GeoPoint. So as you can look at it, it's a pretty comprehensive platform that offers you to build a headed experience through our controls or the headless experience through our plethora of REST API services. We use these REST API services in our web control and in our native control, and likewise, you can take the advantage of those in your app also. And our platform is available across all the devices. We support multiple cultures, multiple locales and regions, and it's a cloud-based services that is powering petabytes of data, which is available across the globe, and you can power up your apps from any part of the world. And it's an enterprise-friendly environment where we support 99.9% SLA, and we provide technical support as needed to our licensed customers. So with that, I'm going to show you in last couple of days when I was planning my trip to Build, how I have used our map platform across our products. And I'm just going to give you a taste of how this is being used across our consumer app and on the enterprise app. So when I landed here in San Francisco on 28th, I asked Cortana about give me a directions to the MOSCON Center. And Cortana looked up the direction and pointed me directly to our Maps app, the first party Maps app. And it showed me a guided navigation that helped me driving to this place. As I arrived here and I've been enjoying the Build session, taking pictures, and as I go through the pictures, map is shown for every picture showing the location where you have taken this picture. As I'm in San Francisco, I'm checking the weather and the weather data gets overlaid on the map and I can see how the temperature is hovering around across the country. And as I was here, I thought of chatting with my regional director, sales director, who is based out of San Francisco, and I thought of giving him a quick text and telling him, saying, hey, I'm based out of Moscow and I'm at this location, and I shared my location so that I can catch up with him, and on his Windows phone, he gets my shared location, and he can see the street side view where I'm based out of, and we decided to meet for a lunch in case if the recipient of the message is not having Windows devices and if they are having iOS or Android devices, they would see the same experience in our Bing Maps website. So they would come to know where exactly I am located. And we decided to grab a quick lunch and we went over our Power BI where I kind of showcased about our sales pipeline. And he was pretty happy to see maps on our sales pipeline and see how geographically we are doing work on the sales side. So as you can see, map platform and is available across our consumer products and our enterprise products. And this is just the glimpse of it. There are many, many products there that uses our map platform. And I thought of just giving you a quick glance before we dive deeper inside our native control. So native control, during our last Build, we talked about that we converged this platform across desktop and mobile, and it was made available to you through a universal platform. And now it is available across Windows devices. So as you can see, from the smallest devices like IoT, like no screen, to the largest screen like 84-inch Surface Hub, the Maps platform is available across these devices, and including devices like HoloLens, where we have supported gestures through Bloom gestures, et cetera, so you can now have your app running on HoloLens also. We are also coming soon on the Xbox, and by the anniversary update, you should see our map platform on Xbox, wherein you can control your map through the game controller and through the remote media. So as you can see, our Maps app is across all the devices. We have built our app once, and now it is targeted across multitude of devices. And likewise, you can take the advantage of this platform. We have taken bet on our platform across our consumer and enterprise products, and you can likewise take the advantage of our platform. You build your app once, and you can target it across these devices. Let's look at how this app and the platforms are being utilized across various verticals. So since Windows 10, Map Control and the Map Platform is being used by you developers, and all the app developers across various domains and various verticals are using our platform. You can see our top-ranking verticals are obviously the navigation, maps, travel, and productivity. But as you can see the spectrum, even the Maps platform is being used in the food and drink application, photos, health, fitness, et cetera. So look at the diversified domains and the verticals where our Map platform is being used. So this reflects back on the principle that I showed you in the earlier slide, that Maps is used across Microsoft products, and you are reflecting on the similar principle. Look at the various verticals across which you guys are using our Map platform. So let's look at it, the code snippets around the feedbacks that you have been providing us over the last 1 year and through the build conferences, through the forums, et cetera. I got a couple of code snippets where the feedbacks rank pretty high. The first one is the polygon with holes. This is the ask that we have gotten, and now we are very happy to inform you that we got one method called polygon.paths that will help you adding polygon with holes. All that you do is you define your outer positions and your inner positions, and then add those, both the rings, to the paths and draw the polygon. The experience exactly remains the same the way you used to draw the polygon in past. It's just that now we support paths, and thereby you can add multiple paths. And voila, you can see that how the polygon with holes looks like. If you look at the geographical area of South Africa, if you want to render a polygon on top of it, you would need polygon with holes. Okay, let's look at another example where you have asked the feedback around this, that, hey, when you look at the world in an oblique view, you start to see that the horizon is hundreds of kilometers away from your visible region. And let's say if you are performing a search or showing the poise based on the geographical visible region, it gets the range gets broader and broader, and your search gets really broader and broader. And when you want to narrow down your search, you want to really restrict to the visible region, we offer you a new API called Get Visible Region, and all that you can specify is show me the nearby region, and thereby it would show the area within your visible region. And it is best demonstrated when I try to tilt and zoom out the map. And as you can see, the trapezoid that we have built it, just for the purpose of demonstration, that helps you evaluate that, hey, you can now narrow down your search within this area as opposed to having the hundreds of kilometers of horizon region where you would show your search points. Okay, so those are a couple of code snippets that we have brought in as a result of your feedback. We love your feedback. Please continue providing your feedback. And next segment, I'm going to show you a code demo where we are going to show you how our native map platform is taking the advantage of all the REST API services that we bring it to you. And this is just one of the examples. You can write many such REST API calls along with our native map control and build your experience. So let me switch to the Visual Studio and I'll show you the demo around that. So earlier in my slide, I talked about that we offer a plethora of REST API services. And I'm going to talk about a REST API service, which is going to give you a geo-bounding box around the zip code. So when you look at the map and when you evaluate a zip code, it is harder to find how that zip code is going to encompass the boundary within the map. And we have got a service called GeoBound that will help you getting the boundary data around your zip code. So let me show you the quick REST API call. It's part of our geospatial APIs that we offer through REST services. And the filter, that special filter that we use, is you get the boundary. And all that you do is you pass a zip code, and you get the polygon around that zip code. And let me show you by running this code. And when this REST API calls will give us a JSON, we deserialize that JSON. We get the polygon information out of it. And we try to render that polygon through the geopath. And let me run it, and you can see how it looks like. So I'm going to put my favorite zip code in the California area, the place where I would love to go time and again, and that's the place in the south area near the Monterey called Big Sur. And I'm going to show you how that area looks like in terms of the zip code. So as you can see, I added the zip code, and it has drawn this entire polygon, and that gives you insights about how this area is kind of covered by this region. And I'm also going to show you one more feature that we are very proud of it, and you love that feature a lot, our offline maps capability. And as I realized that, hey, I'm going to be out on the road with a device which I may not have a good connectivity as I'm driving through my Highway 1, and if I realize that I need to have offline maps for this so that I can hover through this data and kind of go around this region, all that I would do is I'm going to call our launch URI async that's going to call our API that's going to go and download the offline map. We evaluate the lat long based on the write tab that I did, and that's going to download our offline maps data. I'm just going to wait till the settings app gets initialized, and it's going to show me that, hey, you are going to download the California data. And I know for the fact that in order to start my California data, I'm going to close my app so that download can get started. So let me close that app, and that starts my data, and it's going to start downloading the California data. So while I'm on the road and I'm circling around the Big Sur area, and if I need to get hold of the maps, I've got this offline data. Offline maps is available through the enterprise plugins also, where Enterprise IT Pro can even push those data through MDM, and even the further updates can happen through the MDM process. So we have made sure that the offline maps is available in the enterprise area also. So with that, this is a perfect segue to our next segment, where Ricky is going to talk about our Bing Maps spatial data services. And then we have got announcements coming around our web control. So Ricky, over to you.
Oh, great. Great. Thanks, Apoorva. Let's switch back to the slide deck here. So first off, I'd like to talk about the Bing spatial data services and some of the updates that we've made to that. If you're not familiar with that service, it provides three key functionalities. The first one is batch geocoding. So if you have a large number of addresses, maybe a database of addresses, and you want to find out where those locations are on a map, you can pass up to 200,000 addresses in a single request to the service. It'll geocode it for you. Might take, you know, a few minutes, an hour, depending on how busy the service is and how much data you pass to us. We'll then return a response when it's all done, and you can then get access to that data. The second function that it provides is the ability to upload and host your own spatial data and expose it as a spatial REST service. And so you can upload things such as KML file, such as XML files, common delimited files, and things like that. And when we expose it as a REST service, we then give you things like find nearby, find along route, intersection tests with complex geometry, so like find in polygon, and the ability to filter by property. That saves you the trouble of having to go out and set up your own web service and database to do all that kind of functionality. It's simply upload a file, and it's done. The third functionality that the service also provides is, hey, this is a great infrastructure for sharing data. So we've taken a lot of our own data and made it available through there as well. And one of those types of data is our boundary data. Today, we added a couple of new features, or released a couple of new features for the service. The first one is the ability to create data sources by uploading KML and Esri shapefiles. So now you don't have to worry about, okay, you know, you go to this GIS portal and they have lots of great data, but it's not in a format that the Bing Spatial Data Services support. Now you can simply upload that data, and it'll be available to you through a service. However, if you ever use Esri shapefiles, and you know, from different websites, you may have known that they're not always in the same projection system that you want. So for those not familiar with projection systems, it's basically how you measure out the data and the different coordinates or way of representing the coordinates. So for instance, if you go to the State of California GIS portal, it might be in the California state plane projection. And of course, we don't use that for Bing Maps because we map more than just California, we map the whole world. And so it automatically reprojects the map and data to the WGS 84 spherical Mercator projection system. And the nice thing is, it's seamless. You don't even have to think about it. And it takes out a massive complexity that a lot of developers have had to have in the past. In addition to that, the Geodata API, which we use to provide boundary data, we've expanded the capabilities of that. So one of the common requests is, I don't want to just be able to request one boundary at a time. I want to be able to, say, grab multiple boundaries that are all part of a certain entity. So I want all states in the US, and I want to make one request for that. I don't want to have to go through and make 52 requests for each state. So we've now added the GeoDirectory service, which allows you to do that. Looking forward to the, what we're doing with this service on the roadmap, we have a thing called Bing Places. If you're not familiar with Bing Places, if you go to Bing Search, you do a search for, say, a restaurant, you'll see it in the search results. And you know that data comes from somewhere, a lot of times from our different data providers. But if you own that business, sometimes you might say, oh, well, the phone number is outdated, or maybe we've closed that location or moved it, and you want to be able to claim that business and update that. Well, that's fairly easy to do if you have a small business and only a few locations, but if you're a large business Now you have to go through and maintain all your own data through Bing Places. And if you're using Bing Maps, you're now doing the exact same thing with the Bing Spatial Data Services as well. So now you're maintaining your data in two places, thus twice the work. So what we're doing is we're integrating the two services together, allowing those who use Bing Spatial Data Services to easily sync the data between Bing, that service and with Bing Places to eliminate all that extra work. All right, so now on to the big announcement. We released a brand new web control called Bing Maps version 8. As you can imagine, the previous version was version 7. So had a little bit of fireworks there, boom, boom, boom. And let's take a look at what this control consists of and why we built this new control. So we took a quick look at what kind of applications our customers were building. And we found about 70% of all the apps out there that are using Bing Maps today are using it for some sort of business intelligence. That also includes asset tracking apps, which are essentially another form of business intelligence. We also noticed that, being a web control, you would think, all right, it'd probably be on a desktop browsers most of the time. But the reality is quite a bit of usage comes from mobile devices, such as iOS and Android. And that's mainly because our JavaScript control works very well in cross-platform apps. So you can imagine Apache Cordova simply pulling in Bing Maps and using that, and now it works across all devices very easily. So with all that in mind, that helped us figure out, okay, we need to make sure that we align with those who are building business intelligence apps and add more features and functionalities that make it easy for them to do what they're trying to do. But at the same time, we need to make sure we still have mobile support because that's a fairly large portion of our usage today. So today, it's released as a preview. You can access it. Actually, you could have accessed it at the beginning of the Build conference there a couple days ago. But we have it as a preview today. We're going to be removing the preview label in about 2.5-3 months or so. So it's not going to be in preview for long. Some of the cool features about it, so it's definitely high performance. We're not using HTML5 Canvas for the rendering now, so we've moved away from traditional DOM elements, which allows us not only to render data faster, but also render a lot more data as well. One of the new features we have in there is vector map labels. So one common issue we've seen with people or with apps is people overlay their data on the map. The more data you load, the more of the labels you get covered up, and the less of the map you actually see. For some situations, that may not be a problem, but for other things such as weather data, a lot of times you want to be able to see those city labels above your weather radar. And so with the vector labels, we're able to do that. In addition to that, we're also able to do some really cool things where we know certain data that you put on the map is more important than the labels on the map. So if you have a push pin on the map, you're more interested in seeing that push pin and not having it cluttered. So if you have a push pin that intersects with one of the map label will either move or disappear completely. That way, there the focus is on your data, not on the map itself. Because at the end of the day, the map is just a canvas. Your data is what you're trying to actually get your information out of. But that said, we also have a light mode, which not only gives you two benefits. One is if you do want high performance, you go into light mode, it reduces some of the rendering UI stuff that we added in, such as vector map labels. And in addition to that, it gives you the performance thing. Well, it renders it like we did in version 7. So if you're using version 7 today and you want everything to be identical, go to light mode, and then all the labels will be embedded right into the maps themselves. Yeah, you're going pretty fast here. All right. We got a new branching system, which I'll be talking about in a couple of slides here, which is quite interesting. But we also have a ton of new features. And, we didn't just add features for the sake of adding features. We actually looked at what our customers were doing. So we looked at over 5 years' worth of customer feedback, from emails to bug reports to forum posts, to truly understand where are the pain points with our map control today and how can we make them better. And so with that, we ended up building the map controls that better aligns with the type of apps people are trying to create. At the same time, we said, okay, we know how they're trying to create the apps. Can we make it even easier? Can we make it so it's less code to do the things people are trying to do? But we also need to be able to maintain some sort of backwards compatibility because there's a lot of people using version 7, which we have managed to do quite easily. So moving forward, we take a quick look at some of the key features that were in version 7. We have things like the map, polygons, push pins, and things like that, tile layers and info boxes, all the basic things that you pretty much get on almost any other map control out there. We also have some modules. So the advanced shapes module, if you're not familiar with that, gave you the ability to support polygons with holes. By default, we didn't support that, so we added a module so you can add that functionality in. Then the direction search and traffic. Now, these are all great, but you know, with version 8, we've added quite a bit more. So we can see all everything in green here is all the new things. So we added support for additional map styles. Being that business intelligence is the main way people use big maps, we realized that our nice colorful maps isn't ideal for business intelligence applications. It's great for navigation apps and things like that, but at the end of the day, your colorful data and our colorful maps kind of collide. So we're introducing a grayscale map style and a dark scale map style. And we have some more things around that as well that we will be introducing as well, which I'll show later. We have street-side imagery now, which we'll see very soon. The vector map labels I talked about. We have a new test data generator. It seems like a pretty random thing, but it was based on feedback we got from developers. Developers say, I'm building a new application. I need test data. I don't want to have to go out and tie up to my database that I haven't created yet. I just want to build my UI, see how it works, demo it as a proof of concept. Once someone buys into it, then I can go and build all that back end. And so with one line of code, you can generate random data now. If you want 100 random push pins or 100 random polygons, you can even have polygons with holes if you want. It's that easy. Some of the other things we have in here, auto-suggest, a feature that's been requested quite a bit. Nice and easy to use, and we'll take a look at that shortly live. We also have clustering available. So clustering, if you're not familiar with that, if you have a lot of pushpins on the map, what it usually ends up happening is you end up with just a big pile of pushpins and you can't even see the map. So what clustering does is if they're overlapping or very close together, groups them together as a cluster, and simply allows you to render them differently. So by default, we just simply put a number on the pushpin saying how many pushpins are in that cluster, but you have full control over how that rendering occurs, so you can make it look completely different. Drawing tools. So drawing tools have a lot of different purposes. One common one is territory management. You want to be able to draw out your sales region. You can do that very easily, but maybe you want to do measurements and stuff like that. So we've made that built in. Another common thing that's used for is, hey, I want to do a search. I want my user to define where they're interested in searching for, because doing a radial search isn't always what the people are looking for. Sometimes they have, they might want to stay along a lake or something if they're looking for a nice vacation property or something. Heat maps is something that has been requested, and we've seen a lot in a lot of our other map controls. Up until now, it was always something that was kind of a hack, but now it's all built in, nice and seamless integration with the map control, and we'll actually see how seamless that is very soon. GeoJSON, if you're not familiar with that, is a common way of representing spatial data in JSON format. So we support that out of the box, not only for pulling that in and rendering on the map, but we also let you export your data as GeoJSON as well. So that way there you can easily pull in your data, export it, share it with someone else, or share it with another application, or even send it up to a database if that makes sense as well. And it just makes it that much easier. So we talked about the Bing Spatial Data Services earlier. We've also created a module for that wraps those nice features such as getting access to our boundary data and getting access to your own data that you host with us, and made it so that it's nice and seamless and easy to get access to within the JavaScript, so you don't have to go through and play with the REST service on its own. We have a new spatial math library that brings well over 70 different calculations, from things such as calculating area and distances to much more complicated things like calculating Veroni diagrams and doing merging and unions of polygon data, which we'll see in one of the demos later. Well-known text is a common way of representing spatial data as a string. Anything that's Open Geospatial Consortium or OGC compliant usually supports well-known text. So SQL Server, if you take any spatial object and do .toString or .ststext, you'll end up getting that data as a string. So we allow you to take that string and render it in big maps, and vice versa, you can take that string, put it into SQL Server, and it'll render, or SQL Server will understand it there. So the new branching system, one thing we figured out by talking to developers was, it's great, they love having new features, but not everyone wants the new features right away. If you're in a mission-critical app, you're willing to wait for new features, whereas if you're a developer playing around and you want to just try out new things, you want them as soon as they're available. So rather than just having a standard, one release branch that, gets updated from time to time, we now have an experimental branch. So as a developer, as soon as we, build a new feature and check it in and it goes through an automated test to make sure we didn't break everything, It gets pushed out to the public, so you guys can go through and test it right away, which is great. You know, if you have great any ideas, give us feedback. We'll build out that feature, and we'll contact you and say, hey, we pushed it into the experimental branch. Test it out. Give us feedback. And you say, well, it doesn't quite work the way I want it to. You know, can you change it this way? Sure. So we, you know, make the update in experimental. We get it to a point where, it works the way you expect it to work. Now you're more likely to use it because, you know, it does what you need to do, and everyone's happy. After a feature has been in the experimental branch and it's been thoroughly tested, it will graduate to the release branch, which is pretty much the equivalent of what we have today for version 7. Once a feature has been in the release branch for about a year, it'll graduate to the frozen branch. So the frozen branch might only be upgraded once a year, if that. And that's ideal for mission-critical apps where, you know, you don't care about new features and you're willing to wait for them, but maybe, you know, a 911 call center. So, that's a nice option for you as well. So let's stop playing around with the slides here and take a look at the new interactive SDK. So let's switch over here. And my computer decided to go to sleep on me. All right. So for those of you who have used Big Maps version 7 before or some of our previous versions of Big Maps, you may know we have an interactive SDK where you can go and see code samples and try them out. And we decided to make a big revamp of that and make it a lot better. You know, in the past, the code editor was just a simple text box. But now, we can see here we have a nice keyword coloring. But it goes beyond that in this text editor. If you right-click, you end up getting all the same power that you have in Visual Studio. And that's because we're using Visual Studio Online for this code editor. Some other cool things to notice in here. Not only can you use JavaScript to develop with version 8, but you can also use TypeScript. So we're going to be releasing the TypeScript definitions for that as well. You can edit all the examples in here. So if we decide, in this example here, let's set the zoom level to 2, and we press the play button, and the map instantly works. Being that we know developers are going to use this tool, I don't know about you guys, but as a developer, I like using multiple monitors. And so with this nice little button here in the top, we can pop out that map into a separate window. And now we can have one window with the map, one window with the code, and simply develop between the two of them. We also have a nice little drop-down box here where you can switch between the different branches. While we're in preview, the difference will be very minor, if any. But once we go into production, you'll be able to switch between them very easily and see the new features. All right, so let's go back here. So let's actually see what this control can do. So some of the new features here, we got auto suggest. So what this basically does is gives you the ability to get suggestions as you type. Nice, simple feature. But we realize that being able to get suggestions and display them on the map is good, but not everyone wants to have that search box on the same page as the map. And so we've made it so you can use that functionality on its own without a map. And so a good example of that is maybe on your main web page, you might want to have a text box to search for locations, but you don't want a full map on your main web page. So you can do it that way as well. So here's just a quick example of that. Another thing you could do is, you have address forms. Filling out those tedious address forms part by part is a pain. You can have a user come in here and, start typing in an address, and we can, they select it, and then we get all the information about that address, and you could actually pre-populate that form. It could also probably help out reduce the number of errors that people get it when they type in. So it reduces their time quite significantly. We actually have that as a full code sample in MSDN so that you can copy and paste the code if you wanted to try that out. Of course, we have a number of other features here before, like search and traffic directions, but let's take a look at some more of the new features. So the Geodata API is where we make our boundary data available. In this code sample here, we're taking a look at rendering 5 random zip codes. Well, not totally random, they're all together, but rendering 5 zip codes on the map. And what's really cool is the amount of code here is everything that we see in the windows, about 10 lines of code. Nice, easy, and simple. You load the module, you tell it what boundaries you want, it then returns those boundaries, and you can add them to the map or edit them if you want. If you want to, maybe pass them into one of our new spatial math libraries and merge them together and turn that into a sales region, you can do that very easy. So I talked about the spatial math library, and it has there's actually 3 key parts. The first one is the common calculations library, which gives you distances and areas and things like that. There's also the tile pyramid math. So if you're creating a custom UI, so maybe you want to have your own rendering layer, you need to understand how the math behind the maps of all the tiling system and positioning works. And so we made all those calculations available through there, and saves you having to go searching and learning how to do all that map on your own. In addition to that, there's a third part that's not in here in the ISDK yet, which is the geometry library, which allows you to merge and do a lot of other complex calculations that we'll see a little bit later. Going forward, let's take a look at one other code sample I have preloaded here. So this one here is taking USGS earthquake data from the last 30 days and rendering it as a heat map. Nice, simple visualization. However, if I try to do this with version 7, it's going to take me about 150 to 170 lines of code, depending on how you like to format your syntax. And we realized that pulling in data and rendering it quickly is something people want to do. They don't want to have to write a whole lot of code. And so we went through and we took a look at how we could optimize this. So we went through, and first thing, if you are familiar with the way we had modules in the past, if you loaded more than one module, it was a bit of a pain. Now you can just pass in an array of all the modules you want, and it comes in with one line of code. After that, we're simply just say, okay, pull my GeoJSON file or data from, in this case, from a URL. You can also read GeoJSON objects and other different ways of pulling in the data as well. Once we have the data, create a heat map layer out of it, and add that heat map to the actual map. So we get this nice, rich visualization from data that I don't maintain. I'm just pulling it from the web in just 5 lines of code. All right, so let's pop back into our slide deck here and continue on. So some of the differences between version 7 and version 8 that we've made, or improvements. So I mentioned the advanced shapes module earlier. We didn't initially support polygon with holes with version 7, and eventually we added a module that brought that functionality in. Well, with version 8, we figured, perfect time to make it built in by default. And so now you don't need to load that module anymore. However, we do know a lot of people have version 7 code and they don't want to have to go and rewrite all their code. Any code that you've written around this for version 7 will continue to work in version 8. So you can use either one of these code samples here, but if you're developing from new, you probably want to use the version 8 code, which is a lot simpler, which is simply just create a polygon and add it to the map. Don't worry about loading any extra module. Looking at, I just mentioned loading multiple modules, so the code sample I just showed you there with the heat map and pulling in GeoJSON data, I needed 2 modules for that. In the past, you had to load one module, and then in the callback of the second one, load the next module, and if you had more than, 2 modules, you had to keep doing this cycle, which gets very ugly very fast and has a lot of extra code that you don't really want to do. So now, you can simply just pass in an array of modules, we'll load that for you. So we took a look at those zip code boundaries there, adding them to the map. It could have been 5, could have been 1, could have been 100 zip code boundaries. The version 8 code would all have been the same except for the length of the array there. I am not even bothering showing the code here for version 7. If you do want it, give me an email. I can make that available to you. But there's a significant difference in the amount of work that you had to do in version 7 to get this to work. Because the boundary data comes back in an encoded string and required all kinds of parsing and an extra work. This is now seamless and easy to use. Some of the other benefits, had you even written all that version 7 code, there's still a lot of things you would have had to add more code for if you wanted to get some additional functionality or to get the parity with what we've built with version 8. So one of them is automatic culture and region detection. So, the world's a big place. Not everyone views boundaries the same way. If you go to an area where that has disputed boundaries and you have a global app, you want to make sure you show the right boundaries because that could, get someone in trouble, possibly fired if you're not careful. So the nice thing about the map control is we have a pretty good idea of where users are when they're using the map control, so we automatically detect the region. And from there, we can then say, okay, well, someone's requesting a boundary from this region. Let's make sure we get them the right boundary. And so you don't have to do anything. It doesn't require any additional code to actually get that functionality. It's just there. However, if you're doing development and you want to see what that, what that user's seeing, you can actually hard code in the user region you want to see, and it'll actually pull the boundary accordingly. So it's a nice little benefit there. So if you don't want to rely on our automatic detection, you can also hard code that in.
Another thing is session keys. So if you use any of the Bing Maps services with a map, if you use the modules, it automatically uses session keys. A session key is basically a special Bing Maps key that when used with our services, makes all those calls non-billable, which makes it much cheaper. So with this new module here, it automatically grabs the session key from the map, so you don't have to do any extra coding for that. It makes all the calls to the service free, essentially. So the only real cost is the loading of the map initially, and after that, using the service doesn't cost you anymore. And then, of course, the seamless integration with Bing Maps. We saw, less than 10 lines of code, you add that data in, and you didn't have to do a massive amount of work. It returns you an object that Bing Maps already understands. So let's take a look at some real life examples here. And so probably the best or real life example is the Bing Maps website. We've actually been using this control for over a year now. Initially it wasn't, we took the control and made it much more developer friendly over the past year. But it's been out there live being used by users for over a year, with millions and millions of users every day using it. So it's tried and tested, and we put our confidence in it because we use it ourselves. So that's probably the first good example of it being used live. Another pretty cool example, so Best Buy, they've been a good customer of Bing Maps for quite a while now. And if we go to their store locator, they're using our previous version, and I got my demo stuff set up here. So they're currently using version 7 on their store locator. And we can tell by the navigation bar, they've kind of done some editing and hid some of the features there. But, nice basic setup, simple store locator. Now, for them to migrate to version 8, they're not sure if what's going to break or anything like that. They just want to kind of take a look and have a preview. Now, they could go in, open up their project in Visual Studio, change the URL to the map control, try building it and see if it works. But that's quite a bit of work. What if we don't have access to that source code just yet? So here's a nice little trick that we've set up. If you go into Fiddler, you can set up a redirect here. So we'll turn on a redirect that changes the path. So if you pass in the Bing Maps URL, it'll simply redirect to the new URL for the map control. So we've set up this redirect. Let's go through and refresh the page. And it should auto-detect here and do a search. Here we go. Now we notice this navigation bar has changed. And this is actually the new navigation bar part of the new navigation bar that's in version 8. Now we're using version 8. Everything else other than the navigation bar looks identical. And it should, because at the end of the day, we tried to make it as backwards compatible as we could. So for Best Buy, in this case, by the looks of it, they probably don't need to do anything other than just update the URL to the map control. They won't have to do any further development beyond that. So, for them, that's probably a big win for when they want to upgrade to the new map control. All right, so let's go back. So, actually, let's just, I had a couple other demos here I wanted to show. They're just hiding back here. Let's go back to the demos here. So if you did the Quick Start Challenge this week, one of them was a Bing Maps challenge. Actually, there was a couple Bing Maps challenges. But the one challenge that used version 8 control built this application. And so the idea here is we went out to the San Francisco GIS portal. We downloaded their 911 calls for the last 30 days as an Esri shapefile and uploaded it to the Bing Spatial Data Services. So from our side, that took us I think it took us 10 minutes because it was a large data set, so we had to wait quite a bit of time. But we preloaded that for you. This application, what it allows you to do is then query that data by property. So we can go and filter on the type of incident and render it on the map. But when we're rendering it on the map, we're going to render it as a heat map. And so in this case here, we can kind of see all these little hot spots there. But if we want to play around with the heat map control, we can try changing the radius and getting a better idea of where these incidences are occurring. Here we can see, top right corner, quite a bit of burglaries going on. If we decide to go and try something else, arson, we'll see that, it's not too common in the city, but there is a bit of a hot spot on the bottom right. But rendering one data set, putting on the map, no big deal. Rendering it as a heat map, we saw how easy that was. Let's go beyond that. Let's take two data sets. So we took a second data set, which is the police districts that we basically just downloaded from the same GIS portal. Unfortunately, the guy who downloaded didn't bother getting the low resolution version. He put the highest resolution versions he could find, but the map control still handled it. So we're gonna take both the data of the 911 calls and merge that with the Polygon data right in the application and create color-coded boundaries from the exact same point data that we had. So here we go, let's take a look at burglary. And we can see in the top right corner here, it's nice and red, which is what kind of what we saw with the heat map earlier. If we go to arson, we should expect in the bottom right here it to be a lot redder than everywhere else, which we do. So great example of using a couple of different data sources and making it seamless or visualizing in different ways with very little effort. So it's now let's go back to this slide deck and take a look at the roadmap of version 8 and see what's new. Most of the stuff, if not all of it, that I'm going to show you, we plan to have either by the time we're out of preview or within a couple months, so probably within the next 5 to 6 months from now. First one is mobile support. We saw at the very beginning mobile support is very important to us. Our current mobile support is equivalent or very close to what we have for version 7. However, it could be a lot better. And the main reason, mobile devices keep getting higher and higher resolution screens, which means we need better high DPI support. And so that's something that we're adding in. We also want to do a lot more testing on different mobile devices to make sure that all the touch controls work nice and smooth. And then some of the new features that we've added in, such as vector map labels and all that, work nicely on all devices. The TypeScript definitions, what we're going to make available once we get closer to the release. That way there you can start using it in enterprise applications that use TypeScript. Localization, so number of languages and cultures and all that we support, we need to at least, at a minimum, support those that version 7 supported, but we want to go beyond that. We have a nice long list of certain cultures that have been requested by customers, but we also want to try to eventually get to the same parity that we have with the Windows 10 control, which is all the same languages that Windows 10 supports, which is roughly 117 languages. So we've got a bit of work on that side. Another cool feature we're coming out with is the ability to export the map as an image. I don't know how many times I had people say, I created this great map, it has all this nice data, I got all this great intelligence on there, but now I want to include it in an email, I want to send it off to someone, or I want to put it into a report. And they said, well, how can I do that? And I said, well, you go open up snipping tools in Windows and you crop out an area and copy and paste it into wherever you want to put it. And which is a pretty manual process. And they said, well, what? I just want a button where you can press it and it opens up an email and the image is there. Well, you'll be able to do that with this new functionality. It'll basically, since we're using HTML5 Canvas, flattening it into an image is fairly straightforward and not very difficult for us to do. So that's something that we're going to make available to out of the box so you can just get that image and do whatever you need to do with that. It's also great if you want to have it for printing and different things like that. But that should be available by the time we come out of preview. Embedded map API is something, there's some situations where you just need a really simple map. You don't want to have to go out and write a bunch of code. And so the embedded map API just allows you to pass or load an iframe and have some basic functionality. And you can play around with the URL to get a couple of new features and things like that in there. So we got to upgrade our current one to version 8. But we want to add more functionality to it. And one of those things is configuration-driven maps. And this actually came as feedback from the Microsoft MVPs who use Big Maps quite often. And they said, I'm working on a SharePoint application. Every user out there on my SharePoint development or environment has different permissions and access to different data. And it's, I can easily put together a configuration file, automatically based on, okay, this user has access to this data. That data should be rendered in a certain way. I can do that, but now I need to put that into my map. So now I have to write all this extra code to understand that, and it's just a pain. And he says, now I do that here, and then someone else is trying to do the exact same thing, but I don't want to share my code with them, or maybe maybe their system works a little bit differently. And so what we're going to do is define a nice configuration schema that you can use with the map, and then without writing code, all you have to do is put together this schema, JSON response, and we'll load up the map the way you want it and the way you specify in there. So you can specify, zoom into this area at this zoom at this level, and this data set render as a heat map, this data set render as raw data, and just go from there. With that, you'll be able to use it both with the map control on its own, so if you want to add additional customizations, you can do that, but you should also be able to do that with the embedded map API. So at the end of the day, if we create a nice UI for you, you can go through, automatically generate this configuration file, get an iframe and put it into your map or into your website, and have a nice visual map without having to write hardly any code. You just have to copy and paste an iframe into your application. I mentioned additional map styles. So business intelligence is very important to a lot of our customers out there. Two new map styles. One is a dark map style, one is a gray map style. And the dark map style has a lot of good uses, not only for putting your data on it, but if you're in a mission control room and you have a big screen like we see here, staring at a big bright white map is kind of hard on the eye, especially if you're in a dark room. And we've commonly had requests for a dark map. So you can imagine if you're working in a command center for a police or some other large company, that's a nice feature to have. At the same time, if you have nice bright data, it shows up quite nice on a dark map. Grayscale, get rid of all the colors of the map and let your color of your data tell the story, lets you focus on your data a lot easier. So that's those two will be built in by default. But we do realize not everyone wants to be limited to certain map styles. So we're adding in the ability to apply image filters to the map as well. So you can go through and just with a couple lines of code, change drastically how the map renders, as we can see in some of these screenshots here. So the geometry calculation library I mentioned a couple of times already, but it has a bunch of cool features and functionality. So merging and data is great, but now I got two polygons that overlap. What is that area that they overlap? What's that intersection? That's the area of interest. You can easily calculate that with a single line of code with this library. Going beyond that, if you're using SQL Server and you use the spatial data, you probably know that if someone's going to draw on the map, they might not do it quite the way that SQL Server likes it. SQL Server is a bit picky. If you draw a polygon and the points are ordered in a clockwise rotation, that basically means everything but what they've drawn. So that's going to be a bit of a pain. So we have validation tools built into this library that will validate it or change your data so that the way that the user sees it in Big Maps is the way that SQL Server will understand it. Being able to do things like a buffer. So you can imagine, I've drawn a route on the map. Now I'm interested in everything within 100 meters of that route. So the easy way to do that is turn it into a polygon by buffering it out 100 meters. And then taking that polygon and sending it off to the spatial data services that say, hey, find everything that intersects this polygon. We have a number of other things, but rather than going through the full list, let's just take a look at some of these in the actual API. So this is a quick little demo app I put together that goes through and allows me to just generate random data using the new test data generator. So we've got two random polygons with holes here. And we can go through and test a few of the different geometry math calculations. So if you want to do the union, we highlight the area that these two polygons would merge. I could have filled in the polygons, but I wanted to see the originals here for demo purposes. Same thing, similarly, if you want to do the intersection, we can do that very easily and see that on the map. If we try to do a buffer here, let's zoom out a bit and get polylines. So the buffer, and of course it wanted to. Let's go here. All right. Demo demons, you gotta love them. All right, let's go skip the buffer. Actually, buffer on polygons definitely works here. So let's zoom out here and see a larger buffer or a larger polygon. We can see there the red line indicates, taking that polygon and buffering it out a bit. Other things such as Voronoi diagrams. We got all these pushpins on the map. If you're not familiar with Voronoi diagram, when you see it on the map, you might realize you've seen that before. Things such as convex hulls. So a convex hull, basically take all your data, put an elastic band around it, and that generates a polygon, which is good. But you can also do concave hulls, which basically is kind of like putting shrink wrap on your data and heating it up. So you can kind of see it here. It looks a little bit funky, but you can also do that with polygons as well. And for those interested, there's the convex cave. But as cool as that is, we're using very small data sets here. This is all being done in the browser. If it's a complex calculation, it's going to freeze up the browser. So let's actually put a decent amount of data up here. So these are medium-sized polygons. I think each one has about 30 points. Well, actually 60 points because they have holes in them. And there's 15 or 20 polygons up here. So we want to do a union across all of them. That's if I go and do that through the standard functions, it's going to freeze up the browser probably for about 10 seconds. That's not a really good user experience. So we actually exposed all these functions as an asynchronous function as well. So if we go through and we let this run, it'll, I think, depending on the size of the data, so there's a little bit of overhead getting the data to the web worker here, but here we go. It took 5.9 seconds to do that calculation, which, you know, using a web worker and everything, we saw the animated GIF was continuing to run. So if you had a really complex calculation, like if I do the same thing with the large polygons, which I think have about 600 data points each, it ends up taking about 2.5 minutes to do that. So you could actually let that calculation run on the side while the user can continue using the app and doing different things. All right, so let's go back to our slide deck here. Oh, and there's the demo slide. So we have one main call to action, which is next week, go to this URL. This URL currently just points to our blog, but next week we'll update it so it points to a blog post that has all the details around the things we presented today, how to get access to version 8, and also additional details around some of the features that we didn't highlight today just because there wasn't enough time. We'll also have a recap of some of the other things that we've done at the build this week. So we had a number of mini theaters and a couple of pre-recorded sessions as well that show you doing different things such as visualizing real-life data on the map. So, you know, you can imagine constantly changing data, so, you know, GPS tracks and things like that on a map, and also how to visualize big data on big maps as well, even on our JavaScript map control. So from there, we'll open up for questions and answers. Feel free, you know, if we don't get to it today, feel free to email us, or if the idea comes later, you can email us as well.
Hi, guys. Those great features, fantastic, thank you. Are you doing anything to port some of that backwards into some of the WPF control? We're still supporting Windows 7 and Windows 8.
Right. So
apps.
So for WPF, if you go and look for on Bing, do a search for Microsoft Spatial Toolbox. We have an open source project that brings a lot of these same functionalities already to WPF. So things like heat maps and clustering is already there.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there anything built into like the native maps control for showing your current location, your current GPS location? Like if you're on mobile, sort of like the blue dot on iOS, as well as maybe just an accuracy sort of indication. Like in iOS, the built-in control has that, like, the ellipse that sort of, you know, the size of the circle is an indicator of, like, GPS accuracy.
So is your question is around, like, how the location can be tracked?
Yeah, displaying that in the native control.
In the native control?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we do have location APIs through which you can get the location information.
So like, displaying that on the native control, is that something that we need to...
Sure. So we do have a couple of ways through which you can render that, either through the icons or map icons, or through the XAML icons or XAML elements or XAML children.
Okay. Also, are there any best practices with like animating an image, like for instance, like a car, like a picture of a car, animating it along a path? Like animating a geo point along the path.
So basically, as I call out, that you can put it as a XAML children, and you can add animation on top of it to show that animation.
Yeah. Also, if you take a look at the Big Maps blog, we have two different blogs on how to do animations with our map, both JavaScript and with the native control, and so you can use that as well.
Okay, thank you.
Hi. One of the scenarios our customers require is a complete offline scenario. So it's a route scenario where they may have 100 stops on this route, and we want to be able to download the map onto a UWP device and have the set of waypoints, and then let them trace, you know, throughout the route, and maybe receive a real-time dispatch at that point. So is that supported in V8, that type of scenario?
So your question is around offline map and the routing support in the UWP control, right?
Correct, for that number of stops, for a large number of stops.
Yeah, so it is supported. So as I said, let's say the example that I took where I downloaded California map, and with that I can do routing, geocoding, reverse geocoding, I can draw the route, et cetera. So every single thing, minus the traffic for which you need to be online.
Sure.
Past that, everything else you could do.
All offline.
Yep. And you can even test that scenario out in your Maps app on your device, by ensuring that you turn off all your Wi-Fi cell, make sure you have a downloaded region data, and then you can do all the operations.
Fantastic, thank you.
Hi guys, thanks for the presentation again. Esri announced last week the new controls. Are you guys working with them at all? Are they using this control? Or ultimately, are you maybe considering open sourcing the Bing Map control?
All right. So I caught the open sourcing part. We don't know about open sourcing our map control just yet. That is something that we have been playing around with the idea. We have no decision on that at this time. We have a lot of plans for the map control in terms of growing it. Okay. And once we get further down the line, I think that's probably when we'll start making a decision on that. But yeah, in terms of backwards compatibility, that was something that, or is something that's very important to us, and we have a lot of that already there. So migrating your app should be pretty straightforward as well.
So you're saying about migrating from Esri to?
From Esri, to Bing Maps. We do have people who do that. We haven't put together any documentation on how to do that, but that's definitely something we can help you with. If you send me an email, I'm more than happy to help.
Will do. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thanks.
Question then. Sure. Are you doing anything with custom routing? So say, for example, take a large public space where there's footpaths that are not part of Bing Maps, and the ability to be able to draw those trails and then use some kind of spatial engine that you already have to do routing. Is that a possibility right now?
So by default, there's nothing really set up for doing that. However, it is possible to do that, and we have code samples. Let me load up a sample here. Can you switch the monitor for me? Okay. Azure website stuff. Can't seem to type right now. This web app is. All right. Well, this was working an hour ago. We do have code samples on how to create your own custom network and then apply it, your own routing algorithm to it. And so, yeah, it is possible to do stuff like that. It's just we haven't, that's not
so,
a
so that's applying our own routing algorithm. Can we combine that with the existing Bing Maps routing algorithm?
It is possible, because essentially what it ends up being is you can, use the routing service to get to a certain point, and then from there, then connect to your own custom routing service. So if you have, let's say, a building, you can create a network for that building. Bing Maps will then route you to that building.
Right.
And then from there, you can say, okay, I'll just from wherever the Bing Map stops, now I'll apply my routing algorithm to that.
Perfect. That's what I want. That's great. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right. So if there's no other questions, or if you do have more, feel free to come up and ask us. But we also have evaluation form. We do appreciate the evaluations. That helped us get a slot for next year, so we can come and present more cool things to you. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.